Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Pippa Hodge. She'll be telling us about her experiences with therapeutic writing. So tell me a little bit about your experience with therapeutic writing.
Well, I've been involved in therapeutic writing for about 30 years. And I got involved when I came to Canada from England. I had my British Horse Society Assistant Instructor's exams and found a group in the Langley area and was interested in what they were doing. And after that, I got really interested and ended up in a conference in Boston where I met a lady who was planning a group of 18 therapists, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and speech therapists to go to Germany to learn about hypotherapy, and that was back in 1989. And I was lucky enough to be able to join that group, and that was the beginning of me really getting interested in, hypotherapy and therapeutic writing.
So, can you tell me a bit about some of the benefits of therapeutic writing?
Well, I think, the biggest benefit for me as a physiotherapist is really the increase in core strength, in, how the horse, by being on the horse and the horse's movements, how it affects your pelvis and your spine and makes your core work. And so that improves your sitting balance, your standing, your walking, and all the benefits of having a really strong core. So that's one of the major benefits that I see. And I do see an improvement in balance and coordination with the children. And I think there's the connection with the horse. Which is huge, to have a live animal that, you have a bond with. And then recently we've been adding violin music. One of my volunteers is a concert violinist, and she's been playing violin music during some of the sessions. And that's also been really interesting with the sort of added layering of music with rhythm and the frequency of sound. And we've seen kids singing more and making more vocalizations, and that's been really fascinating to me because part of your core is your diaphragm, and so I think that combined with the music has also helped. So there's all sorts of exciting and new things that we're trying.
So in your time conducting therapeutic writing, have there been any challenges that you've seen?
The biggest challenge is always financial. Where most of the therapeutic riding groups in Canada and are all charity driven, so we're always very dependent on our funders. We do get a little bit of funding coming from the BC Gaming Commission, but most of our funding is organized, trying to do fundraisers and organizing the clubs. We're very lucky in that we have some car clubs, the Hot Rod Club, and also the Royal Bank of Canada, excuse me, they also support us. But the biggest thing is funding, because you're always restricted to the type of horse you can get, because often we have to have borrowed horses or leased horses. We can't go out and actually select a horse that we would like for the program. And same with equipment. We're always kind of a little bit short on what we would like in terms of equipment.
So to look at the converse side of things, has there been any success that stood out for you in your work?
Lots of successes. But I think if I had to pick one success, would be a boy called Sam who came to me, and he was not walking. And over the period of the next 4 or 5 years, his goal was to walk across the stage and graduate without using a cane or a walker or anything. And he was an amazing teenager and really saw the benefit of the riding and hippotherapy program. And he was able to get across the stage without using any support and went on to be an independent walker. So that to me was really exciting when a kid themselves saw the benefit of what the program could do for them.
So is there any modified equipment that's used for the riders?
There is. Now, there's two things here. There's therapeutic riding and there's hippotherapy. So just to clarify the difference, because in therapeutic riding, you basically use an English saddle usually. Some people do use Western saddles, but usually an English saddle. And then we do modifications to the reins, modifications to the stirrups, and sometimes we'll pick a different type of saddle for therapeutic riding, like a dressage saddle that has a deeper seat, or a stock saddle from Australia that again gives them thigh support. In hippotherapy, the horse is long line from behind. It's not led on a lead line from the front of its head, but driven from behind. And most of the time, I use what's called a supercore, which is a flat pad that's padded that goes over the horse. Sometimes I'll use a sheepskin because I put the child in many different positions. We don't just sit facing forwards. They'll be sitting backwards. They'll be sitting sideways on the horse. Sometimes I lie them down on the horse, and I have to have a horse that has a really good quality walk. So the horse has to be, you know, quite well trained. Not that a therapeutic riding horse shouldn't be well trained, but on the whole, the level of training tends to be slightly less.
So,
and many people don't understand that there are two different types. You know, the therapeutic riding and the hippotherapy is different. And in the States, it's called adaptive riding. They don't call it therapeutic riding.
So if you could send any one message about the need for therapeutic riding and the therapies described, what would you say?
Any one message?
Yes.
Golly, that's a difficult question. I think for anybody who has difficulty with mobility, or has particularly with children who are maybe developmentally delayed or slow, or autistic children who would really benefit from some of the things that therapeutic riding and or hippotherapy can do for people. And I think, you know, there are so many needs for clients out there, and I think the riding therapy is growing. You know, there's more groups starting up. There's more people hearing about it. And I think if I was a person with a disability, I would certainly be looking at what, you know, could therapeutic riding help me with my mobility.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Well, thank you, Cam, for asking me to talk about therapeutic riding.
Of course. Pippa went on to mention an organization called CANTRA, which is the National Therapeutic Riding Association in Canada. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Samantha Newmarch. She'll be sharing her insights into recent stories of disabilities in the media. So tell me a little bit about your thinking on recent disability news coverage.
I think that it was so terrible to find out the actual statistics. You know, in 2012, 70% of Americans with disabilities report abuse in 2012, according to CBC. And that is far too much. You know, like with all of the physical abuse, financial abuse, just taking advantage of people with disabilities is completely morally wrong and also illegal. That's just a shame to see the actual statistics.
So, how do you think we as a society can do better in this sense?
Especially in North America, you know, people with disabilities have specific rights that adhere to protecting them against these kinds of things from happening. I also read that only one third of abused report it because they're afraid of retaliation. There should definitely be, I'm sure that there is laws in place that, you know, state that you're not allowed to hurt people in that manner. And I can't believe that, you know, people actually do. And only one third of people with disabilities report it because they're afraid of retaliation.
So, in your opinion, would a person with a disability get better results for seeking for help in these cases?
Pardon me, I'm sorry?
If a person with a disability were to ask for help, do you think we as a society would be there to offer it? Do you think there are resources in place that could be of benefit?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, seeking legal help is usually quite costly, and so I think that if, you know, lawyers were to take into consideration that this is actually a big nationwide issue, they should do these cases pro bono.
So, in some of your previous interviews, you've talked about accessible housing issues. Have there been any developments in that that you wanted to share?
Well, under the Liberal government, I know that they're working on infrastructure, and infrastructure not just for highways and, you know, sewage systems and railways, but also helping the disabled in places where they need it the most. The Conservative government, a month before the election, actually stated that they would increase the maximum mom disability grant to $4,000 from $3,500, which really would have been a big help, because especially to families that that, you know, have a disabled family member and are not really able to, you know, build a safe financial savings by the time they get to be an adult.
So, do you see things improving as we go for individuals with disabilities and things like housing and grants and even media coverage? Do you see us as a society getting better at this?
Absolutely, 100%, especially under the Liberal government. Adam Vaughan, who is the riding leader for Trinity Spadina, which is my riding, has stated that within the next 4 years, there will be substantial development for, you know, low-income housing, housing for the disabled, building infrastructure where people with disabilities need it the most. And I think that's a really important progression within our society.
As always, thank you very much for taking the time out to do this.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hiatus House is a social service agency offering confidential intervention for families experiencing domestic violence, including the Crisis Intervention Program, Residential Program, Transitional and Housing Support Program, Crossroads Program, Fresh Start Men's Program, Fresh Start Women's Program City, Fresh Start Women's Program Country, and the Hiatus House School-Based Program. If you are interested or for more information, please contact us. Call us at 519-252-7781 or visit our website at www.hiatushouse.com or come to our location at 250 Lewis Avenue, Windsor. Contact Hiatus House. Get safe. Get help.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Pippa Hodge, therapeutic riding expert, and able-bodied observer Samantha Newmarch. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Trevor Barton from the Guelph Enabling Garden. Tell me a little bit about the Guelph Enabling Garden.
Okay. It was originated as a millennial project back in 1999. a number of us were sitting around a table planning. I worked for the city of Guelph at the time, and one of my co-conspirators, or my co-partner, was Betty Richard, and she came from Disability Services at the city of Guelph as well, too. And I came from the recycling background and agronomy at the Wet-Dry Center in Guelph. And what did we have in common was really what it came up to. And I have certainly had an interest in soils, and Ms. Richards had an interest in getting people to garden. So we came up with this idea of an enabling garden, because there was no public space with a therapeutic type of garden within the city of Guelph. There was private facilities such as the Homewood Health Center and St. Joseph's Health Center, but nothing in the public realm. And so from that germ of an idea, and you know, just a brainstorming session in 1999, we were able to bring in other like-minded people, and by 2005, we had the garden built. So it was a long process, but we had the land given to us by the city of Guelph as well, too, and it's located in a historic riverside park. And we're autonomous. We have a board of directors. We don't report to the city of Guelph. We just have this property that, two of us started it. Now we have more than 70 volunteers, and we have a board of directors, and eight of us at this moment. And so from that little germ of an idea, we got this garden to grow. And what it was, we wanted a public space that was accessible and for people of all abilities, but we wanted to have gardening available for people with other abilities. And so we had raised beds, wheelchair accessible beds, specialized tools, and we always had thought that we would have a horticultural therapist instructing people and assisting. And this would be at free as well, too. So part of the you get this property built in this facility was the Trillium grant that we managed to secure, because we incorporated in 2002 and we fundraised for 3 years before we even broke ground. And then we had a local company, Reed Heritage Homes, which was one of our largest benefactors, and we were able to build, and we opened officially in 2005. Long story, but it's exciting 10 years.
So how has the disabled community responded to having this garden available to them?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was just, first it was an idea, and we brought, let's say, like-minded people, and then the University of Guelph horticultural or landscape architects that we had involved, and park planners, and then local agencies like Arc Industry, Community Living, Guelph Disability Network, Seniors Associations. There was just a huge demand for this, especially as we progressed and were able to build in a public park. So since day one, I mean, it's been phenomenal amount of people that we have now, at least 15,000 visitors, clients, consumers a year, and that starts in April and goes to the end of November. And there are raised beds that people, we have to go to a lottery system now because there aren't enough beds to go around. But there's a number of group homes and agencies that may share a bed, and would share the labor and share the love, or share the joy of gardening.
So you mentioned some accessible tools are being used. Can you tell me?
That's correct. Yeah, we got them from Lee Valley, and it's rakes and shovels that are extended. They're not ones that you would use with your feet, but they're extendable and ergonomically designed for people with who have some limited ability, but they can sit from a chair or a walker and reach into the garden maneuver the soil to plant, and to help with weeding as well too, and also for the cutters, the plant snips. Accessible tools, and we have an inventory of those, and we teach people how to use them. There's no charge for it, but we control the they're controlled workshops. It's just, you can't come into the shed and get these things. We provide them on an as-need basis, and a allow people to use them and share it. So it was a donation from Lee Valley.
So what are the next steps for the garden?
We've only built phase one. There's such a demand that we would like to get to phase two, and that would be more raised beds and also ground beds for us so we could grow nursery stock as well, too. One of the things we've been able to do is because our plantings are all native Ontario species that we actually split because and pot up and sell as our annual plant sale around the May 24th weekend each year, and it's a great fundraiser for us as well too. But we have some unique native Ontario species that people want cuttings from, or and so we're able to raise funds doing that as well too. I should mention that. But we do need to expand just due to demand, and we don't have enough beds to, as I said, a lottery system. I'd love to be able to provide more accessible beds for a lot more of the community.
So if you could send any one message about the need to include everyone within activities like gardening, what would you say?
Gardening is a social event, and I think people, we because we're master gardeners and we enjoy it, it's just sharing that for people of all ages. It is a real community builder as well, too. We're more of a destination point that we want people to come to our garden and become a volunteer or just engage in it or just come and enjoy. It is a destination point. They say along the river, a respite from busy lives, and the garden is built for people of all abilities. We're very, very pleased that we've just got some braille signage up that has been part of our plan. These things take a bit of time just due to funding. And we have wide accessible walkways that are textured surfaces as well, too. And the garden is built for people of all abilities, and it is well utilized.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. A lottery system. Yes, it provides great opportunities for some. But for those who have to wait or try something again, that can be a little more straining, I think. Fact is, all facilities should be made factoring in that someday person with a disability is going to want to make use of that business or service, and therefore accessibility should be a prime consideration for anyone who's making such designs, even in terms of new houses being built. Yeah, the original owners might not be someone with a disability coming in, but the possibility exists. They may acquire a disability, they may move, the house may be sold to somebody with a disability. Fact is, it's just good business sense to factor in the needs of anyone who could possibly want to enter into a place. And yes, we are making promises and policies going forward. The truth is, no matter who's in power, accessibility has to be a consideration. Sam offered some great insights into what has been promised and what's going to be done. Now, the politicians do follow through on what they've pledged to the community, and that's a wonderful thing. But it's also a matter of upkeep, making sure that these things are not only built, built safely, built reliably, and we don't rest on our laurels in terms of improvements. We don't just say, we built this, it's fine, it's good, let's move on. We always take into consideration that accessibility is something that's all about development. It's all about taking the next step, making the next improvement. Because you're not just talking about statistics on a page. You're talking about people's lives. People with families, hopes, dreams, jobs, all these things. In terms of infrastructure, which Sam touched on, it really is something that has to be considered. Fine, you have accessible housing, but does it allow for a transportation system that lets a person with a disability get to a workplace. And once they get there, can they enter into these facilities comfortably and safely? But also, with things like the Enabling Garden, are there opportunities for these individuals to enjoy a natural setting, and yeah, even to participate in its development and making it better? Fact is, disability life is human life. It's not a matter of creating something separate for people with disabilities. It's a matter of creating inclusive environments that aren't just geared for one or the other, that are geared to all the people, so that they can share an experience together, maybe even learn from each other's insights. Because that is how a community is built. It's not simply a group of people living in the same area, under the same political body. It is a group of people who come together in friendship and understanding, who see the settings around them take shape, who go to church together, go to work together, whether they have a disability or not. Fact is, people do tend to grow and thrive from this sense of community. Nobody gets through life on their own, but as new opportunities are being created, things are just looking better and better for people with disabilities. That being said, they're not the only ones who can benefit from something like the accessible gardens. It's also something that can be enjoyed by the able-bodied population, and not just caregivers and those who want to see the disabled succeed, but anyone who wants to go and enjoy. What improves for one of us can improve us all. Think about it. Communities build each other up. And yes, with the recent election, a lot of promises have been made. And these do have great potential to give greater opportunities, greater access for the disabled population. But really, it's a matter of making them a part of everyday life, equal inclusion, not having it as an afterthought, allowing for the disabled population to have fully accessible spaces and better policies in place allows the community to see these are just people of strength and intelligence, and there's no difference in working alongside them or an able-bodied person. They're all just there to be a part of it all, part of the community. Someone who adds to the substance of what we call life. Someone who can build up others. Because that's what it's all about. Communities strengthening each other. Whether it's therapeutic riding, or insights into disability life, or an accessible garden, everyone has a great story to share in terms of disability life. If you're someone with such a story, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear your stories. Hearing from you folks at home is one of the best parts of being part of this show. We as a society should keep disability stories in our minds, remembering as new structures, new policies are built, they should be inclusive just by their very nature. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.